Dave, how'd the deal go down for the pinball table?
Yeah, were we able to get that refurbished Adams Family?
No, it turns out the guy didn't have an Adams Family table after all. It was just some generic pinball game that only plays on an old Nokia cell phone.
Bummer.
Well, at least we still have our supply of Taco Bell for the week.
Oh no, I still traded it. I mean, pinball's pinball, right?
God damn it, Dave. What the hell was that?
Chad, run a perimeter scan.
There has been no perimeter breach. The disturbance occurred within the walls of the store.
What are you talking about? We're all right here.
What the hell was that?
Sounded like a Zorp sound.
Oh, well, that explains that.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Who goes there?
He's got a gun!
Stand back. Don't make me bonk your heads together like coconuts.
Okay. Everyone just be cool.
Dave, would you like me to vaporize the intruder?
No, wait. I know this guy.
Whoa!
You better start talking, Caldwell.
Remember? From the Pirate Radio Southland Tales episode?
You're not too convincing with that one, Ryan.
Guys, we don't need to do this!
Blast your ass from here to Sector 3 if you don't holster that firearm right now.
The hell is going on?
Ouchie!
Look, I said I didn't want to do that.
Sorry!
Don't worry about it. Hey, I only came in to rent a video.
I can help with that.
This tape, please.
My name is Nobody.
Oh, I thought your name was Mike.
Seriously, though. I've never heard of this fucking shit in my entire goddamn life.
Us neither!
Oh, you guys are in for a treat. Sure, you may be fans of spaghetti westerns, but have you ever even seen any without Clint Eastwood in them? This is a late period Italian western, made in part by Sergio Leone himself. Chad, please load the 1973 western parody film, My Name is Nobody.
Hey, that's my job.
No sudden movements.
Sorry.
Movie loaded. Beginning playback.
It ain't easy to make balls spin.
That leaves you and me face to face.
Huh? Nope. That leaves you alone against 150.
He's gonna make trouble for himself.
Nope, he's gonna make a name for himself.
How'd he do it, Pa? I only had one shot.
Pa,
ain't nobody faster than him?
Faster than him? Nobody.
Okay, that was My Name is Nobody. I'm your host, David Snyder. I'm joined by fellow cinephiles and men you would not want to run into at a public urinal, Ryan Caldwell.
Howdy ho.
Michael Allhouse.
Hey, are you eating all of our beans?
Back up there, Michael. These are my beans now.
Why, you son of a...
Anyone else got a problem with me eating these here beans?
No, not at all.
Okay, well, that got dark fast. We're also joined by our man in the machine, Chad Greiner.
Your capacity for emotional indifference rivals my own, Dave.
And joining us from what appears to be a tear in space and time in our foreign film section is special guest... Actually, I don't think I ever got your name, stranger.
Oh, me? I'm Eric.
just Eric? That's okay.
Yep.
I thought it'd be a lot more mysterious than Eric.
No. I tried the mystery thing for a while, but I'm really happy with just being Eric right now.
It still sounds mysterious.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough, stranger. Well, all right. My name is Nobody. So I like to consider myself a fairly big Spaghetti Western fan, but this is one I don't think I'd ever heard of. I know who Henry Fonda is, but I didn't know that he did like a comedy Spaghetti Western parody film. This was kind of a blind spot for me. What about you guys? Have you heard of this before?
I hadn't, no. I mean, it's like a Spaghetti Western is a little bit of a blind spot for me. And I kind of like know their influence in cinema, really, but kind of, yeah, it's, I have only seen probably a couple of them, and they're probably with Clint Eastwood in them, you know? Like, yeah, everything I know mostly is going to be from Tarantino's, you know, remixes, basically. So.
Well, what made you come in here through Space and Time today, Eric, to pick this one?
Well, I just really love a spaghetti western. I went through a phase of a while back of just watching sort of all of them, or at least just like as many as I could. I watched a bunch of the Django's, obviously all the Leone's, you know, I came across this one randomly. It was like at the time the only way you could watch it was on like a weird like YouTube upload. And I watched it. I was like, oh, this is like great. I like that a lot. It mixes comedy and Western in a way I really enjoy. And then I watched it again within the same week.
So I guess I should actually restate what I said earlier. I'm a big fan of the Sergio Leone spaghetti Westerns. But as far as the genre as a whole goes, I'm probably more of a casual fan. I'm by no means an expert. I've seen the Leone ones and the original Django, but that's kind of it. Eric, you're the super fan. As someone who's seen way more spaghetti Westerns beyond just the Leone films, are they usually funny like this, or do they tend to be more serious, or is it like usually a bit of both?
They can be kind of serious. I think there is a element of comedy or like kind of, or like just clever lines and stuff, like, you know, in the beginning of, Fistful of Dollars, there's a thing about like he gets mad at the guys for like making fun of his horse and then makes them apologize to the horse and ends up shooting them and stuff like that.
It's
so like
it's like dark comedy or
yeah
something,
yeah really. it's very like, you know, it has to do with Western murder and all that kind of stuff, but they're it's definitely not like dour affair. Like it's, they can be fun and clever, but I think a lot of the time they're supposed to just be like cool.
Well, I would, this movie is kind of billed as a spaghetti Western parody, but I would kind of, I mean, with the exception of a few moments, mainly when scenes are sped up, when he's like punching people or slapping them, like for the most part, to me, this just sort of felt like a more lighthearted spaghetti Western, kind of like a buddy spaghetti Western film. Like it was just a lighthearted take on spaghetti Westerns, not necessarily a full on parody. I don't know. What do you guys think?
This is just like straight up like clowning is happening in this movie.
Like there's full on clowning.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Like, there's clowning in it, but I wouldn't say, like when I'm looking at the Chattopedia entry for My Name is Nobody and it says this is a spaghetti Western parody, my immediate thought is like Airplane or The Naked Gun or something like that. Or
yeah.
Blazing Saddles.
It's
like,
not quite
this
there.
Has
I would say it's more like in the way like a kind of like an Edgar Wright movie is a parody. Like, you know, Hot Fuzz is a buddy cop parody, but it also functions really well as, like,
that's
a buddy cop action movie.
Yeah.
Well, like, when the movie starts, it is like, honestly, when we were watching it, I think for, like, the first, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, I was thinking, like, this is a comedy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
This is just a
it takes a while to get to
Western.
It. It's like, you kind of just have to get to the character, the nobody character.
It's like a real 180 because, like, again, like I said, the first 10 minutes is
pretty
pretty tense and a straight up Western spaghetti Western. You get these guys, you know, the classic thing, and these guys come into the town. They look gruff and tough, and they come into this barber shop and just like completely, just you know, at one point they stick like a fucking thing in a kid's mouth or something,
yeah,
right?
Like the stick of butter.
Yeah, I was like, this isn't very funny.
It's good. I love that he knows that guy wants to kill him and, like, makes him finish the shave. Like, that's how powerful and good this guy is at shooting and, like, being a cowboy man.
Yeah, so we should explain a little further. So in this opening scene, Henry Fonda comes into this barber shop, and there's these guys there that have taken over the barber shop. And they're clearly there to kill Henry Fonda's character, Jack Beauregard. And you got this tense scene with, like, this... And you're wondering when he's just going to slit Henry Fonda's throat. But then you get this moment where Henry Fonda sticks his pistol in the guy's crotch, and suddenly he knows the game, what's up. And the guys outside are like, what the fuck's going on, man? Is he going to cut him or what? And eventually he shoots him. He gets this... Oh, God. This is what I love about spaghetti westerns, parody or otherwise. The gunshot... Like, the showdown scenes when they happen are so cool. And, like, in this movie, it goes full on slow motion. Just kapow, kapow. And guys flying through glass. It's
everybody
it's
really
is
unlimited,
well done.
Unlimited ammo. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It's not important how many bullets are in the gun.
It kind of gets funny with that. Just everyone shooting stuff. Like, that's kind of like... they take it so seriously. You shoot everything. Like, every scene has, like, somebody shooting.
But this is full-on, like legit spaghetti western stuff here. And, like, Henry Fonda takes the... Like, he puts, like, $10 in the little dish, and he lets the barber and his son go. And, like, the son kind of, like... takes note of the situation. He looks around at all the dead bodies. He's like, wow, he got him with one shot. Nobody could do that, but nobody. And then boom, my name is nobody. Like, all of them splashed across the screen.
Yeah.
And suddenly I'm like, oh, so now the comedy's taking into effect. And this is when we're introduced to our titular character of Nobody, played by Terrence Hill, Italian comedy star at the time. And, like,
good looking guy.
Beautiful man.
Yeah.
This elongated scene of the credit sequence when, like, he's just sitting there. He takes, like, a fly. He puts it in the water. He's fishing. And he has, like, this big, long, like, 2x4 type thing or a log or something. And he just raises it over his head and just waits.
Yeah.
Throughout the entire credit sequence, he waits with this raised over his head. It keeps cutting back to him.
I mean, so you guys are more well-versed in the spaghetti westerns, but they're pretty... I guess the Western in general is influenced by samurai films, right? Like, kind of stuff. And is this one sort of like playing off the idea of kind of Jackie Chan sort of kung fu movies or something? Kind of like more funny, sort of slapsticky kind of stuff? Like, I don't know.
I guess
I'm trying
it
to
could be.
Make
like,
connections.
When was Jackie Chan stuff, though? I feel like that was later in like
the 80s.
That was
later in the 70s. I think 70s you're on something, because... you're onto something, Ryan, because the first, I think it's kind of universally known as the first spaghetti western, A Fistful of Dollars. That was taken from Yojimbo. That was pretty much directly lifted from Yojimbo, which was a samurai movie. So I think that's fair to say that they kind of take influence from the Kurosawa samurai movie.
Let me see, because Drunken Master came out in 78, so it was a little bit after this.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. It's pretty, it's just like, it's great. It's interesting to see this because there is definitely that element of just like the fly. Like, the first thing that went in my mind is like stuff like Karate Kid and stuff like that. It's just, but it is a weird movie for sure. I've never seen anything quite like this other than Blazing Saddles, really.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've been introduced to our main characters, Jack Beauregard and Nobody. Eric, since you're kind of the fan of this movie, why don't you explain the synopsis of My Name is Nobody?
Well, essentially, Jack Beauregard's whole thing is he wants to get out of the West. He's done with it. He's sort of a legendary quick draw shooter, famous for being able to kill people, a bunch of people at a time. And so he sort of wants to get out of it because that makes him a target. People are always trying to kill him now because they want the honor of like killing Jack Beauregard. So he's trying to get across on a boat to Europe or something. And then he comes across our guy Nobody, who is like somehow also supernaturally talented. He sees a lot of himself in him. They sort of butt heads sometimes. They sort of are at odds sometimes, but I think there's a respect there that's really nice. Anyway, so that basically there's also this wild bunch, 150 strong.
Speaking of that, that started to get funny to me. The group of 150.
They showed it like 10 times.
Yeah,
I know.
Just started to become funny.
A thousand horses.
Like a cartoon where it's like a bunch of like cowboys on horses, just like all together, like a huge batch, and you just kind of like a big circle, almost like a tornado, like running through town, you know, kind of thing.
You never see them up close. They're just always like on 150 horses, and then like all we know is they have dynamite in their bags, which is important.
That's one of those things that like started off kind of like, oh shit, what is this? And then it got funnier as the movie went on.
Yeah. And then so nobody has this premonition where like he sees Jack Beauregard on one side, the Wild Bunch on the other, and he takes them all down, kind of thing. It's like this legendary like way to go out for him. And so that leads us to this whole like thing where he steals a train and. I don't know, like, how much detail do you want to
cover? Basically, Too Long Didn't Read. Nobody is, like, a huge fanboy of Henry Fonda's character, Jack Beauregard, and he wants to desperately see him go out in a blaze of glory to be in the history books. Like, what does he say at the end? Like, you'll be in the history books! Like, it repeats it over and over again.
And you'll be on Earth reading them.
Yeah, and then, yeah, so that's the basic story. There's also some weird nebulous shit that I am never really 100% clear on with Jack Beauregard and his friends, and, like, there's this weird thing with gold and a mine. It doesn't really, like Eric, like, explain the gold subplot, because I didn't know what the hell was going on there.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. Basically, this group of guys stole a bunch of gold, and then now they're laundering it by pretending that the gold came out of the mine so that they... No one knows that it's stolen, and they start killing people to protect the secret of the stolen gold. I think that's the plot.
Well, because we get this scene when this guy is like talking to the guy who owns the mill or whatever, and he's just like, "You got to make it legit. It's got to be real. Like, you got to really produce gold or something like that." I'm just like, "Wait, what? What?" This is when it becomes confusing. I'm just like, "How are they gonna do that? What the fuck? Like, are they gonna somehow turn this crappy ore into gold?" It just seemed like it seemed to me like a bone they were throwing as far as story goes for this movie, because like really the main thrust of this movie is just. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's just in there, lip service for a story. This whole movie is about nobody just being a huge fanboy of Jack Beauregard and just wanting desperately to see him kill a lot of people. To the point where he is like, it's fair to say nobody is psychotic, right? He is a psychopath.
Yeah, he's just weird. He's quirky.
Like, just his face, the look on his face every time he hangs out with Jack Beauregard, and especially at the end when Jack Beauregard is taking on the Wild Bunch, his face is like, and it keeps cutting to him. Like he's just taking such glee in the death of all these people.
Yeah.
He's the witness.
I feel like he knows.
Stinker.
It feels like he's like Deadpool. He like knows it's a movie.
Exactly.
He knows there's no real stakes for him. Like, he's going to get through it because he's the hero of the Western kind
he
of
is
thing.
He's like
this is when we get into really Looney Tunes territory. Every time he draws his gun or when he slaps people, the film literally is sped up and it's just like, okay, movie, pump the brakes a little bit.
No, make it faster.
Yeah.
This is when he becomes Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
I mean, I do this every episode. I think I have to. It's now a bit. But you got to bring it to Star Wars. Did anybody have...
Just let it go, Ryan.
Does anybody have, like had flashbacks to, like, Last Jedi with this movie? With, like, just, like, the young new Jedi meeting the Master. And, they're, like, there's the whole thing with, like, the mirrors were going on. I'm Ray from nowhere. Tons of it. It's all there. It's all on the page.
You know, I think you're right, Ryan. Yeah, Ryan Jedi Johnson totally ripped off Last Jedi stuff. From this movie.
Yeah, not the first. I'm just saying, like, referencing it. It is. It's just the idea of like being some like I'm, you know, the whole thing like I am nobody or from nowhere. Like that's from these type of movies and stuff. And and so it's just kind of I don't know. And this the mirror thing sealed the deal for me. You know, like the.
Well, Eric, I have a request on Ryan's behalf. When you go back to your time or dimension, whatever the fuck, could you tweet Ryan Johnson and ask him if he took inspiration from this movie? I would like to know.
Yeah, well, I can get in contact with Ryan from this time and sort of make him do
it.
Oh
shit!
Okay. Wow, yeah. You have some futuristic, fucking.
No, it's past
iPhone there. Oh, wow.
Yeah. For me, it's...
Well, how do we... I mean, what... what do we discuss? I mean, I feel like this movie, as we were watching it, like, in true spaghetti western fashion, like, a lot of scenes, almost all of them, are really stretched out for tension, you know? I feel like that's a staple of the spaghetti western genre. It's the whole idea of, like, the operatic battle, the showdown of these characters. You get the back and forth with the close-ups, their eyes, and the guns. You get a lot of that in this movie.
Yeah. But there was, also it's funny, if you look at, like, the runtimes of the like Man with No Name movies, like each one gets like a half an hour longer, like every time Leone makes a movie. And then you can sort of just see it stretching and stretching. Like Once Upon a Time in the West is like everything takes forever to happen.
Well, see, that's the thing. I was a little conflicted because on one hand, I get it's a spaghetti western, and that is a staple of the genre, those elongated scenes. But on the other hand, it's also trying to be a comedy. And in my mind, good comedies have a good, tight runtime. You know what I mean? So it's like those two things were like conflicting for me. So there were times, and also the fact that a lot of the scenes in this movie kind of just felt like little vignettes. It's like, and here's nobody doing this crazy thing, and now we're going to throw them over here, and there's a circus kind of, or there's like a carnival in town, and this crazy shit, and there's going to be a spinning thing, like, you know, where he like hits people with
it.
What was
the urinal thing? That went on for like 10 minutes.
And oh like, my God.
It was hard to,
the urinal scene.
Every time I'm like, what's going on here? And then I
don't understand what's happening there, really, other than I guess
he's trying to. I think he's trying to make the guy nervous, like and not be able to pee so he can run away and steal the train.
He's
trying to distract the guy.
I guess that's the conductor of the train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is really weird because you're like, it's not really clear that he's the conductor until he leaves the bathroom. So you're just like, for a while, it's just like, it's like a guy looking at another guy at the urinal for like 5 minutes. And they're just like making weird faces at each other and going like, and then like,
well,
you're like, what's happening? And then he runs away. And
he keeps like, nobody's staring him down on the other side of the urinal. And he keeps like looking off to the right, like, I'm like, what is he motioning to? What's happening?
I truly don't know. It's a mystery.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy, too, because the edit's crazy because he walks into that urinal and then it cuts and he's like leaning against the wall like he's been there for a while.
Yeah.
You know, like, is this movie about to take a turn? What's going on?
Well, I think it's kind of cool, but it's just like a weird, it's just weird. I don't know. There's a couple of weird, cool edits like that, like weird things, weird matches and stuff. But
can we talk about the freeze frames in this movie? Just, just beautiful freeze frame work.
Really nice.
I love the freeze frames where nobody is just grinning like a fucking lunatic and making check marks like on the train to indicate all the kills that Henry Fonda is getting.
I really liked right before that, like how he kept like adjusting to like look cool on the newspaper camera.
Oh yeah, that
the
was
guy's
good.
Like gonna take a picture of the big moment, and he keeps like moving his hat around and like trying to do a cool face and stuff. That's good.
Oh, well, that's after the climactic battle. The climactic battle happens.
Oh, you're talking
like,
about... Henry I see. Okay.
Henry Fonda's got this horse. He's gone back to the mill. he doesn't kill the guy. Like, and this leaves nobody very disappointed. He wanted him to kill that guy in cold blood. Mm-hmm. He's like, he didn't murder that man. Why didn't you murder him? But he takes his gold, and he only takes his share, I believe. He takes his share in $500, which is the entry fee, I guess, in order to... Or rather to
reserve the boat,
To reserve the boat, So Henry Fonda at this point is off. He's going to get his train. He's like, I don't give a fuck about you, nobody. I just want to retire to Europe and not die by a gun, you know. So and that leads to the climactic battle at the end. You got nobody or Henry Fonda, Jack Bogart's like riding out on his horse. He's out in the middle of nowhere. His horse is dying. This was kind of fucked up. Like, I don't think I had ever seen this in a movie. Like, his horse is there, and you see, like, the sweat coming down from the horse, like, the foamy stuff. Mm-hmm. Had you guys ever seen that in a movie before?
Yeah, I didn't think
I did.
I missed it.
It looked like this white foamy stuff coming down from the horse. I'm like, what the fuck's going on with that horse? And apparently it was just super hot and like needed water. Like, that's why Henry Fonda gets off his horse. He starts giving water to the horse. But like, I don't think I'd ever seen that in a movie before. But anyway, a little tangent. I thought that was kind of a cool detail. But anyway, this is the moment when the Wild Bunch come. And again, as if like a mystical force, it just always shows up where he is. It just, it's, you see it off of the distance. It's coming. And at this point, he's just like, all right, well, fuck. He tells his horse to skedaddle. He gets, like, a couple rifles. And it's just like, at this point, you're like, how the hell is he going to kill 150 guys? There's no way he has 150 bullets on him. There's no way this is going to work.
They seem like they're never-ending, these bullets.
Well,
I also really like, by the way, with the Wild Bunch, I really like how their theme song is like this really dissonant version of the like William Tell overture.
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Like... and it's
oh,
like,
God.
It's very like, just, I don't know, it sounds like cartoony in a way.
It is
like,
cartoony.
It adds
it
to the vibe, yeah.
It was starting to wear a little bit on me. Like, it kept playing and just, meh, 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 meh. I was just like, oh, please, please pump the brakes, movie, of that song. It's a little, yeah, it's a little too much. Anyway, the Wild Bunch comes, and it's at this point that nobody shows up with the train that he stole. And he just sits there, and it's in a real dick move, too. Henry Fonda's like, ah, yes, I'm out of here. He goes to run to the fucking train, and nobody just backs it up. He just backs it up to the point where he's, no, you ain't getting on this train. You got to kill those people first. and at this moment, we get a little callback. And I'm glad that they had this in the movie because initially, I had no idea what was happening when they first did this. So it begins to come to light how he's going to kill the Wild Bunch, how he's going to survive, how he's going to have a chance to like wipe out their numbers. And earlier in the movie, the Wild Bunch comes into town. They get some dynamite. And Henry Fonda happens to notice that their saddles are like particularly shiny, and he makes a note of pointing this out to nobody earlier in the movie. Like, just like, dude, your saddle, it's like super shiny; they can see you a mile away. And this comes into play later in the climax because you find out that all the guys in the Wild Bunch apparently have these shiny saddles, and it lets him know, he's like, okay, I could shoot the dynamite in the saddles, it blows up, and that's how he evens out the numbers. And I forgot where I was going with this because I can't remember where we were in the discussion earlier. So.
He doesn't really kill them all. It just seems like he just blows up a bunch and then gets on the train and takes off.
He does a good... he makes a dent.
That's what was funny. I assumed he was going to kill all the people and that's what was going to get him in the history books. But no. As he's killing all these people and causing all these explosions and what looks like a very... no safety zone for these horses. Like, I gotta imagine a lot of horses got really hurt or at least very scared during this sequence.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. Like, seeing these, I mean, this movie's not even that old, 70s, really. And just all the time, I think of that too. I'm like, oh man, how many horses have we, like, traumatized or killed from shit like this, you know? Like, it's.
Well, from what I understand, Spaghetti Westerns, like, the safety on set was very lax. To the point where, like, I remember, like, just a little tangent, like, The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, there's a scene when Eli Wallach's character is, like, handcuffed to a dead guy, and dead guy's on the train tracks, and this train's coming, and Eli Wallach's like, all right, I'll throw the guy on the tracks, and then when the train comes, it'll, like, it'll cut off the handcuff or whatever. So that scene happens, but what you find out later, like, in the trivia, apparently they didn't really plan for the clearance. Apparently there was a little step jutting out from the train, like the step up line. And if Eli Wallach had, like, lifted his head even just a few moments late, he would have been decapitated.
Ah.
Wow. Because he literally did that. He was sitting there, and the train went through, and he got up, and, you know, the scene plays out. You don't think anything of it. But apparently in the trivia, like, if he had gotten up just a few months later, he would have been decapitated by that train step.
Jesus.
So what I'm saying is safety was not really an issue or a concern on Spaghetti Western sets.
Can I tell a little tangent regarding horse safety?
Uh-oh.
All right, here it goes. Go off.
Back in the before times, I worked at a dollar theater. I might have told this story before, but we were showing The Last Samurai. For some reason, we had it was still on film. Our projectors, when it would read cue tape, which is usually would be used to turn the lights on in a theater, it would turn off our projectors, basically, too. So the... So it was probably the first weekend we had Last Samurai, because we don't usually know that tape's there until someone tells us. Like, and so the movie, it's weird too when you're watching the movie, because the movie, the credits start and then the movie just, you know, turns off basically. And we had someone complain that they couldn't see the end credits to Last Samurai because they wanted to know if horses were harmed during the movie or not. And they wanted their money back because of that.
Interesting.
Was there a lot of scenes in Last Samurai with, like, horses in jeopardy? I can't remember that movie.
I think so. I mean, there's, like, samurais and guns and cannons and stuff. I haven't seen it.
Well, see, there's the samurai, and he's played by Tom Cruise. Just to jog your memory on the movie.
I remember, like, I think my boss, like, saying, like, they're CGI horses, lady. They're not, like...
they're just CGI. Don't worry about it.
Wasn't a real horse within 50 miles of that set.
They're not blowing up real horses, lady. They're CGI.
But in this movie, I think a case could be made, like, if you were watching this in 1973 and somehow the movie cut out after the credits... you may want. There might be someone in the audience that might want to know. Hey, were there any horses killed in the making of that?
Oh,
movie?
There were. Like, they probably didn't. It was shot on the off the radar, you know.
But what's so great about this scene is that, and this is what I love about Nobody. Again, he's a fucking psychopath. Jack Bogart is killing all these people. You just see him, like, writing, like, with chalk, like, feverishly, like, eh, eh, eh. And, like, the whole time it keeps cutting back to him in freeze frame, like, eh, eh, eh. Like, all these different emotions, like, of insanity on his face.
He loves it.
Jack Bogart, he's looking back to the train, like, hey, it's pretty great, man.
Yeah, he's
gonna go out in history.
He's
so weird.
It's so bizarre.
It's like Ali go in the ring, dude. That's his hero.
So, yeah, like you said, he doesn't kill all 150. He basically cleans out the numbers. He gets what Nobody looks at. Nobody seems to refer to as a pretty respectable number. He looks back. He kind of, like, looks at all the numbers, the slash marks. He looks back at Jack Bogart. It's just like, nah, it's like, yeah. Not bad, man. This is pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea is more that he faced 150 guys and got away scot-free than, like, he killed them all kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And at this point, he's just like, okay, I'll let you live now. Get on the train. We'll get the hell out of here. Mm-hmm. And it's at this point in the movie, we didn't mention this before, but Nobody has a penchant for beans. He really likes beans in this movie to the point where he's, like, cooking, like, a whole stove,
in the
pot
furnace
of beans,
the train.
Like, in the furnace of the train, and you get another elongated sequence where, like, him and Henry Fonda's character are just standing there, and he's just eating these beans while this smoke is just enveloping him as he's eating his beans. And I'm just like, how is this movie going to play out now? I honestly didn't know. And this is basically he asked Nobody for an honest, like, all right, so what the fuck, what's happening now, what's the next step, and Nobody goes, oh, well, now you gotta die. And again, I had no idea where this is going. I'm just like, is he actually gonna kill Henry Fonda? He is clearly a psychopath. He could do anything. He has, like, mm-hmm. godlike powers.
He seems more interested in the story of it than the actual, like, people.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have no idea what's going to happen. So we cut to New Orleans. And what's cool about this scene, they must have had a pretty respectable budget for this movie, because there
people,
are a lot of
huge,
extras
wide,
in this scene.
Yeah.
Wide shot, big old sets, New Orleans. And I think it actually was New Orleans.
I think
right?
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're all just standing there. I guess they're just going to have a duel. Because this is how his story ends. And what I love about this scene, as they're about to duel, this fucking cameraman, like, walks up with this kid out of nowhere, as if someone said, like, there's going to be a shooting. Someone get a camera. They just run in, and it's great. He motions to Nobody, like, hey, could you move a little to the left? You know?
Which is probably, like, a real thing, I bet. Like, it's like almost,
I
like...
I wouldn't be surprised.
Like, if they're, like...
Yeah.
Like, like, it's almost, like... Yeah, they're almost like posing and making a picture, you know, for history.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to think of, like, those old pictures, like the people getting, like, really adjusted, like making sure the hat's right, the coat's right and everything for the cool picture that's going to be in the history book.
Yeah. It reminded me of Back to the Future Part 3 when the grave digger is, like, keeps measuring Michael J. Fox for the grave, like prior to the duel.
Yeah.
But anyway, like, long story short, he shoots Jack Beauregard. We find out it was a stage thing, and he fakes his death so he can go fuck off to Europe or whatever. Basically the movie.
Did I miss something, like, about staging the death? Like, did he, like, fall over? I don't remember, like, how it ends. Like,
He sort of stumbles off, and then it goes into, like, newspaper clippings, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
He just stumbles off. I was just like, how did he... For some reason, I had this thing in my head that, like, I guess he killed... I don't know. Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, faked his death. But I just didn't see it. I must have missed it.
It was a little odd, too, because it almost sounds like he actually does hit Jack Beauregard to some degree. There's some sort of weird sound effect out where I was sort of just like, did he hit him? Did he hit his gun? Like, what exactly happened?
Yeah. Yeah. And then he kind of, then there's this sort of, like, thing where of them kind of, him writing a letter to Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of saying, basically, like, a thank you letter. And then in the middle of it, he, like, I guess he's, like, there's guys out to kill him or something. And he, like...
Yeah, the Wild Bunch is after him now. Because now he's somebody.
And then they play that whole bit again with, like, trying to kill the fly with a log. And he ends up, like, killing one of the Wild Bunch that's, like, sneaking up on him. It's like a Naked Gun moment.
Yeah. And then he, like, just falls out of the... You're like, what's he doing? And then you see the guy fall.
Yeah.
It's a good little slapstick bit. It's funny. And then the best, I think probably the best, like, nobody pun in the whole movie is the, like, gravestone for Jack Beauregard where it says, nobody was faster.
Mm. Oh, yeah. That was nice. I like that.
I like that. That's pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
But not the last scene in the movie. We got one more freeze frame, guys.
Oh, yeah. Call back to the beginning. Barbershop.
Oh, yeah. He goes into the barbershop, nobody, and who is the barber? But it turns out it's the fucking leader of the Wild Bunch. And he's getting a shave, and as Henry Fonda's voiceover reading the letter is playing out, he basically has a PS saying, like, you know, watch who's giving you a shave and haircut type thing. And instead of sticking a gun in the guy's crotch, or in this case, the guy's ass, he just sticks his finger up there.
Yeah. The middle finger. Freeze frame.
Yeah. And you get a freeze frame with his finger literally sticking in the guy's ass as we cut to credits.
Not even cut. They're on. It's freeze frame.
Yeah, it's the freeze frame is on. The credits are coming up with his finger in the guy's ass. Yeah. And he literally has his finger in that guy's ass.
Yeah, big time.
What a way to end the movie. Like, again, it's such a stark contrast between the beginning of this movie, which is like a full-on, you know, real spaghetti western, and then literally just ending with a finger in a guy's ass.
And it still does, like, the great thing with, like, you know, it's supposed to end on, like, the same thing as the beginning, you know, it's supposed to bookend it.
Yeah.
It rhymes.
It's like
it's like poetry.
It's great. It's a crazy...
It's beautiful.
Cool little weird movie, yeah. It made me want to watch, like, it made me, like, want to watch another Spaghetti Western kind of vibe. You kind of get so, like, cool. Hooked into it.
Yeah. Like, the vibe of it is just, like, very, it's like a salty cracker or something. You just want to keep going with it.
Are there any more? It seems like you're more adverse in spaghetti westerns than I am. Are there any more like this, Eric?
There's a few. Like, so I think part of the thing with this one is the, like, My Name is Nobody thing is a reference to an earlier Terrence Hill one called Trinity is My Name. I think those Trinity ones are supposed to be comedies too. I actually haven't watched those yet, but And so I think those are supposed to be like that. I think not really a lot of these go that, at least, I don't know. I saw like maybe 20 of them. There's probably 200. So it's hard to say, yeah, there's like so many. It's a real rabbit hole, but
Did you guys, like, read on the Chattopedia about the whole directing dispute with this movie?
I've seen a little bit about that. Like,
seems like a real babe situation.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah. I actually, I was thinking about the Leone thing, like, with this movie, because I think, was it J.D. Amato who talked about, like, every movie is about its filmmaker kind of thing, or about its director?
Yeah.
I feel like there is a lot of this, like Henry Fonda is like this cowboy at the end of the West. Like, it, you know, it's almost the 1900s, like cars are starting to exist and stuff. And, yeah, I don't know. I feel like sort of by the end of that spaghetti Western period, Leone was sort of feeling like I'm done with this. I want to get out. I want to get on my boat to Europe or whatever. well, I want to like move on with my career kind of thing. I sort of felt a lot of that with
well
that
he
Henry
wasn't
Fonda
the
character.
he's not the credited director on the movie.
No, I know, but like as far as the dispute goes, I believe that he is a big author of the movie, like not necessarily the auteur or anything, but
well, the credits it says based on an idea by Sergio Leone.
Yeah,
well, he had his friend, it was a guy that was the assistant, what's his name? The director, it's credited, Tonino Valeri, I guess. He was the assistant director on a couple of Leone's films.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got to direct this one.
Yeah, so he's nobody.
Yeah, he's basically, yeah. And he's kind of, it turns out, like, there's, like, if you read the entry that, like, some people are like, oh, Leone directed all my scenes, or he directed these scenes, and that, like, this guy was incompetent, and Leone did all the goofy comedy weird bits and stuff in the
movie.
Yeah,
I read that. Yeah, I read that Leone did the bar scene, which is, like, a big scene in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, there's just a dispute of, like, who directed it, and it kind of sounds like it literally sounds like Babe, where, like, Miller was like, eh, I'm not sure if I want to make this movie, and then ended up, like, kind of being there the whole time, and, like, basically backseat directed Babe. So,
yeah.
So, and now those two directors hate each other. You know, the guy that directed has the credited directing for Babe and George Miller. So.
Oh shit!
It's true.
Well, this certainly sounds like a similar situation here. I mean, like, in fact, further reading the Chattopedia, like, one of the other producers was just like, "I wouldn't do that, dude. If you let Leone on this picture, he will claim that he directed the whole fucking thing. Don't let him near it. It's enough that he's a producer, that he's a writer. Don't let him direct anything."
That's exactly what it seems like with Babe, because the director of Babe ended up getting a directing nomination, and I think that really rubbed Miller the wrong way, where he was just like, "I could have been. That's me. I should be the one."
Damn. You gotta wonder if there's similar bad blood between. Or if there was similar bad blood between Spielberg and Tobe Hooper with Poltergeist.
Oh, probably. Yeah, it's a similar.
Because you watch that movie and you're just like, that's flat out a Spielberg movie. Yeah.
What's up with these guys? Like, these, like, just get to this thing where they're like, I don't want to direct it, but they really do. It's like it's a weird thing. I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
well, they don't know. There's actually a pretty funny story with the song Kiss by Prince, where he had, like, given that to The Time, like Morris Day and The Time. And he's like, "Here, you take the song. I can't figure out anything with it." And then he heard them playing it and was like, "No, I'm taking it back. This is my song." Yeah, I think it's just like, you're like, sort of like, I can't figure out what to do. And then there's, like, maybe one little element that someone else brings to it. And then you're like, "Whoa, I get it now. I get it now. I can do it."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, clicks with you all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. But yeah, that's interesting. And but yeah, I mean, we're getting to the end. I just kind of want to mention, like, I think the movie shot really well, and I mean, there's a lot of, like, weird production things with, like, dubbing and all that stuff, but
yeah, at least it was really scrappy. That's sort of a hallmark of the genre. Like, they're really just like sort of run and gun, like, scrappy movies, and
but it's still pretty, like, the editing and the shots are all still really beautiful though. And
yeah weird.
So.
And I guess it was cut too. I think that, if I'm not mistaken, there was like 15 to 20 minutes cut from the movie. Like, I think what we saw was like an American cut.
Oh,
really?
Which is weird, because like I didn't think anything. It was long already, and I didn't feel anything was missing from the movie.
Mm-mm.
Honestly,
maybe it had more of the, like, gold plot thing.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe you would have got it if it had all that.
Maybe
the rest
in
it.
Yeah.
Well, you guys got any other thoughts on? I mean, whoever technically directed it, it looked good to me. It looked like a Sergio Leone Western.
Yeah, good job. We congratulate either of you.
Mr. Valeri?
Tonino Valeri. I wonder if he did anything else after this, or that was kind of like it. I guess he did direct.
This might be like his most famous movie, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Like, I guess if you go to his letterbox, it's like the highest grossing movie in Italy at the time. Or of that year, rather.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Spaghetti westerns were still very much a thing in Italy at the time.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I've heard it before, but why exactly the Italians with spaghetti westerns? Like, what was, like, they just loved them and just were like, we want to, and they're still popular in Italy? Like, I forget what the reason for that. Like,
I think a lot of it just had to do with, like, no regulations on the, like, film production. So, like, you could do... There was in old American westerns, like, you couldn't, there was, like, weird rules, like, you couldn't have the gun and the people being shot in the same shot. So, like, in the very in Fistful of Dollars, that's, like, the very first shootout is, like, you see the gun shooting three guys, and then it's like,
yeah,
so I think there's just, like, these weird little rules. You can't show, like, a certain amount of blood or something, like, and so I think just in Italy you were able to do that, and there just happened to be directors there who were interested in doing
that. Yeah, I guess it's Italy. Yeah, maybe they had film going on, and just like, oh, we love westerns, let's keep making them. And,
and I think there was a whole, like, there was, like, a bunch of, like, weird western, like, old old Mexico towns, like, built up in Spain and Italy, like, for some reason. They were just, like, there. And so they filmed on the same sets a lot of the times, too. Like, it was just, like...
Yeah, it sounded like most of them are shot in, like, Spain, and that's where all the deserts and stuff are, and it's just, like, a... Yeah, it's just, it's interesting, like, why, I guess, that makes sense. I'm just thinking, like, why wasn't it Germany? I guess German was a part of the production thing as well. Like, they were, like, if you look at some of the credited, like, production where the money came from is Germany, but...
I think Klaus Kinski was in a couple of them.
I don't know, like, why isn't there, like, Russian Westerns? Maybe there is, but it just, the spaghetti Western just is such a thing.
I think once it started, like, once there's... You know, once there's Leone, then it sort of is just like, well, this is popular. Like, once that first movie hits, I think it sort of just becomes, like, the scene, you know?
They must have just been in the genre, because, I mean, this is referencing the, like, another Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, just, like, all those kind of, like, James Bond kind of rip-off movies that they were probably making and all that. Just they loved action sort of genre movies.
Yeah. So,
it's interesting. Because I guess, like, it reminds me a lot of, like, I was thinking of Rumble in the Bronx a lot watching this. Like, just
really?
Like a,
okay.
I don't know, just cause, just with Jackie Chan, and that's the one I've probably seen the most, and how it's like, you know, it's supposed to be New York, but it's shot in Canada, and everybody's dubbed in, even the American actors, and just like, I don't know, just had that vibe.
I still gotta watch that. Do you guys have that here? Can I rent it?
I think we got.
Yeah, man, we got it. I'd be down to watch that movie too.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll have to do it because that's my favorite Jackie movie for sure. So
nice. I don't know if I saw this somewhere, if I thought of it myself, because I'm really like deeply involved in understanding film and stuff, you know. but the fact that his name is Nobody, I think, is in itself a parody of like the Clint Eastwood character, the Man with No Name character, like. The fact that he has no name, but they like really call attention to it instead of just like having it be like a thing in the movie. I read somewhere that a lot of the like whistling and like the weird stuff in Morricone's score was like he was parodying himself like from those movies as well. So I think a lot of the parody stuff maybe sort of like flies over. It's like kind of like. Yeah. You have to like think about it to realize why it's. I don't know.
Well, like there's a moment like there several scenes when there's like tense moments with Henry Fonda's character. Like the music that plays is straight up the music from Once Upon a Time in the West.
Oh yeah, yeah. I read that.
It's like it pretty basically exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the other thing is that I thought was interesting is the nobody thing is actually like. Really based on, I think, from the Odyssey. Like, do you know where there's, like, the Cyclops? Like, he meets the Cyclops and then stabs his eye out. And then he, like, tells the Cyclops his name is Nobody. And then when the Cyclops goes to, like, tell people who stabbed his eye out, he can't, like, no one believes him because he's just saying nobody did it. And they're like, what are you talking about? Like, that's, like, a bit from the Odyssey. Anyway, I just thought that was funny, and that sort of relates to the movie in a way. So,
oh, for sure, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, crazy movie.
Yeah, I recommend it to the Wasteland. I'll go ahead and jump on that.
Nice.
I think I would too. It's I think my only gripe is there are parts that where it stretched out a little bit too long. Like I said, I think sometimes the comedic bits clash with the spaghetti western. Elongated tension bits, and it's just like, you know, I like my comedy to be a little tighter, but then I also understand that spaghetti westerns, that's just a staple of the genre, that elongated scene. So it's like those two things are constantly clashing in my mind, and it's just like I don't know which one I can never tell where the middle ground should be. But in any event, I would recommend this movie too. I think it's good. I don't know if all the comedy necessarily works, but I think for the most part it's a good watch. It's really well shot, and if you like spaghetti westerns, I think you get a kick out of it.
Yeah. I really, you really piece it together, Eric, by kind of comparing it to an Edgar Wright movie like Hot Fuzz, and just kind of like a, where it has its moments of seriousness, but it's definitely a comedy, you know? This might be
it functions as the genre it's parodying like really well. Yeah, it's like a good version of that movie, but it's also like making fun of it.
Yeah, and it doesn't go as far as like Blazing Saddles where they're just like, you know. Calling for a car.
Go into the
stuff,
Warner Brothers back lot and
yeah. This is 1884. You can sue her, or whatever he says.
Headley.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's not quite that far, but it's definitely in like the Edgar Wright style for sure. And I think it's fun. It made me want to watch a lot more of stuff like this. So,
all right.
Well, that was a fun little piece of spaghetti Western history. You know something, stranger? I like your style.
Yeah. I don't even mind that he killed Mike.
Oh, right.
You know, I feel pretty bad about that whole, like, shooting your friend thing. What if I made it up to you?
How?
Well, I am an interdimensional traveler. I could swap out your Mike with an almost exact duplicate from a parallel dimension.
Eh, that's okay.
Now, wait, Ryan. If Mike's not around, that means one of us has to empty out the septic tank every week.
Oh, yeah. All right. We'll take another mic. Preferably one with the same culinary skills.
That man could cook up a mean rat burger. I'll give him that.
You got it.
Oh, and while you're at it, can you do something about Dead Mike's body?
Yeah, he's really starting to stink up the joint.
No problem. Let me just make a few adjustments here.
Perfect!
Sorry I couldn't do anything about the blood pile.
Oh, that's okay. We'll get the new mic to clean it up.
Oh, speaking of, let me just finish a few calculations here, and...
Hey, guys!
Holy crap, it's really Mike!
You killed another one of me, didn't you?
What do you mean, Mike?
Dave, this is like the 10th time I've had to replace a copy of me. I know the drill. This is my hell, and I've come to terms with it. Now, if you'll excuse me, I gotta get Chad to implant a fresh batch of memories in my head so I can get up to speed.
Hey, to be fair, we didn't kill you.
Yeah, it was this weird dimensional time traveler guy.
Ah, whatever.
Beginning memory implant.
Speaking of which, you got any more movie recommendations for us? This one was pretty good.
Oh, sure, I got plenty. But I have to be getting back to my own time now. Or is it my own dimension? I don't know. Who's to say? This old movie watcher's getting a little long in the tooth. Maybe I'll see you sometime if I ever make it back this way. But I got a boat to catch and $500 worth of interdimensional deer piss to spend. Adios, fellas.
Well, that was crazy, wasn't it?
You see, I told you the dimensional traveler was real.
Sorry, Ryan. It's just hard to know sometimes when reality begins and your brain trauma ends.
Memory implant complete.
Well, all things considered, this reality could have been a lot worse, I guess.
Don't worry, Mike. You used to be nobody. Now, you'll be somebody.
Whatever, Dave.
To sign off now, so even if you've been a stinking nosy troublemaker all the time, thanks for everything just the same. P.S. Just one more piece of advice from an old-timer. When you're getting a shave and cut, be sure the right man's wearing the jacket.